Hello and welcome to The Future is Spoken, produced by the Digital Assistant Academy. Voice applications are gaining momentum in many segments like finance, healthcare, and retail. Where does voice stand in education segment? In today's episode, Shyamala Prega speaks with Julie Daniel Davis about the voice in education. A former accountant turned educator, Julie Daniel Davis enjoys thinking about innovative ways to enhance education and then making them happen. 15 years in the K-12 setting, with the last role being Director of Instructional Technology and Innovation, led to being an educational consultant, advocate for voice technology use in education, and an adjunct EdTech professor at UT Chattanooga. Julie is striving to meet the individual needs of student and teacher and take them forward in their growth as lifelong learners in the use of EdTech. Somewhat of a futurist, she is never content with the now and is constantly striving to better the world she lives in. She is seen as a passionate person with the skills to help others catch the joy, whatever that joy might be. She is an instructional technology professional development leader / speaker, author, Amazon Alexa champion, and Bixby Premier developer. She believes voice technology can enhance education in mighty ways. She helps educators use technology resources to enhance critical thinking, creativity, communication, and collaboration, all skills required for students to become influencers of their world. In 2020, Julie became a CoSN Certified Education Technology Leader, CETL. Julie is the founder and host of the Voice in Education podcast that was a finalist in the 2020 Project Voice Awards. Julie has been on the planning/steering committee for EdCamp Gig City since 2015. She has served in the past as co-moderator of Twitter chat hashtag TNEdChat, where educators from Tennessee and beyond talk about educational technology issues. She is recognized as a leader in the Canvas LMS community, where she serves as a course facilitator for the Canvas Certified Educator Program. EdTech Magazine named Julie as having one of the top K-12 IT blogs for 2015. She was recognized in 2021 by Amazon Alexa in their Women in Voice series. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to The Future is Spoken. Today I have a very, very special guest, Julie Daniel Davis. Welcome, Julie.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be with you.
Yeah, it's our pleasure, definitely. So, Julie, tell us about your background.
Yeah, so I actually have degrees in both accounting and education. I had a full career in accounting and then decided I wanted to be a teacher who taught accounting. And honestly, never had that opportunity. My first jobs that opened up were to teach computers. And that opened up a world to me that I've been writing ever since. So for 15 years, I was at the same school where my children had gone to school or were going to school at the time. And I early retired from there last year with the title Director of Instructional Technology and Innovation. Now I am an adjunct professor at the University of Tennessee in Chattanooga. And I'm teaching educational technology courses to graduate level students and how to just use technology in really good ways for classroom use. And in the midst of me being the director of instructional technology and innovation, one of my roles was to really look at emerging technology and be aware of it so that I could kind of be thinking through, what does this look like? And is this going to impact education, or should it impact education? So that's kind of how I got involved with the voice industry. I was really interested in the fact that a device could connect to the world at such a low price point. And I felt like that could really solve some equity issues for school systems. So as I started working, bought my first device, tried it out in the middle school classroom and went, no way am I sticking this in with middle schoolers. And since then, that was the very first tall cylinder Alexa device. Since then, just really been helping teachers intentionally use voice in ways to just support the learning that's going on in their classroom. I created the Voice in Education podcast, where I do a weekly podcast / briefing on Alexa and available other places, just helping teachers think through, what does it look like? What are the possibilities? And just making them aware of the future of voice and what could happen.
That is amazing. You're doing a lot of work in this space. And my question was about the voice in education as well. And yeah, your podcast, I think you have over 100 guests in the podcast, right? So what is the format of it? Is it more educational, or is it like how the education industry, like schools and classrooms, are thinking about voice tech or are leveraging? So what exactly your podcast has in
that area? So it's really a variety of all the things you mentioned. A lot of times I'll have voice developers who are developing specifically for education and learning to come in and just talk with the listeners about what they created. And it just gives kind of teachers a heads up of what's out there, because discoverability is one of the hardest parts of third-party skills. So making people aware of what's out there. But also I share, last week or this week on Sunday, the podcast was an educator in the California San Francisco area who uses voice assistants in her classroom with students with special needs. So it's just kind of making people aware of what we can do or what people are already doing. I think we're really early on adoption for educational purposes. We're looking at innovators and early adopters only in this realm now, because there's so many hoops you've got to jump through to make sure that you're staying within the boundaries needed for school privacy. So my goal is just to make people aware of what's going on out there and what's coming. I believe it's coming.
Definitely it is coming. So voice is really picking up fast. And, you know, we have seen a significant adoption from when Amazon started to now so many devices, even the smart glasses and ovens and smart appliances, everything and everywhere, right? So what kind of unique opportunities does voice provide in education sector?
Yeah, so great question. I usually tell teachers to start off with something like a flash briefing. And if you can imagine, especially during pandemic times, one of the things that most education systems got from parents was, we're not getting enough feedback from the schools. We need more support from the school side. So my suggestion now in pandemic times is just to start off with a flash briefing and have that either daily or weekly, where a student can say, hey, Alexa, or hey, Google, what's in Miss Davis's flash briefing? And so it might say, hey, don't forget today is a PE day, bring your shoes for PE. It might remind you what books you need to have ready for today for Zoom meetings if it was all online. It might be a reminder that there is an upcoming test or homework that's due, almost like a checklist of things to help parents navigate this space of helping their students. And so I think right now, if they're still in the school building itself, I know some districts across the country, it looks very different and around the world. But if you're still in school, imagine a family sitting around the kitchen breakfast table and they ask, what is our flash briefing for the? And so it just is almost like a checklist to be prepared for that day. But what if it is online learning, and then it's more to the student reminding them, these are the things that you need to participate in today. You need to, you know, get done today, that type of thing. So that's the first entry point that I suggest to teachers, because you don't even have to have it in a classroom in order to utilize that. You could also have it in a classroom though, and sitting in the corner of a room. Station rotation learning is a really big thing in education, where you have a teacher working maybe with 5 kids in one area, students working on a hands-on activity in another area, and then imagine in another area, a voice assistant in the middle of a desk, and it's leading these students through an instructional practice that actually supports what's happening in the classroom. So it's almost like, you know, the word voice assistant is truly an assistant in that area, where someone of authority is speaking to those students, letting them know what they need to do. And then it gives that teacher the ability to spend more time in small group instruction.
Yeah, so this is an interesting use case. So you are saying like flash briefing, as in it could be, you know, reminder of things or checklist of things, right? So currently the school administration and the teacher kind of sends an email every time there is an update for parents and teachers, right? So are you suggesting like a use case like this would be more proactive kind of like if parents don't want to check their email or have missed it, they can just, because they use their voice assistant more, they can just use it to get that kind of information?
So I can tell you, because of my role in prior in education, K-12 education, the amount of people who actually open up emails from school systems is a very low percentage. And so education systems are trying constantly to look for more ways to reach those families. If you've noticed, most school systems are on social media. They have a Facebook page. They have, so I believe meeting families where they are. And when we look at the immersion rates of a voice being in homes already, this is a great opportunity to just meet them once again, because I think the more areas you can put that information out, the more likely you're going to actually be heard and the information is going to be transferred. So yes.
So two problems which I want to understand how you are thinking about fixing those. One problem is discoverability. How would a parent discover that a feature like this is available and they can leverage it to get the information, or students for that matter, knowing right. Like, okay, these are my checklist, I have to complete these things, right?
Right.
And the second problem is, what kind of effort are we talking about from the educator's standpoint?
Good questions. So discoverability, I know, especially in elementary schools, most of the time there's a, you know, something that goes back to the parents, a piece of paper or something, or an email. And so what I would start doing as an educator is just start saying, hey, here's the link to my skill. If you want to use that to hear what I've updated on the flash briefing, here's an option. I don't think at this point in time we can make it as a mandate of you have to do this, but it's just another option to make sure. And so you would just, the way you would normally, however it is you're normally contacting them, you would do it through that means, but with a little note about it being available there. And as far as how hard is it for an educator, this is the part that's beautiful, in my opinion, of where with an, especially with Alexa. So Alexa has Amazon Blueprints. And if you're not familiar with Blueprints, think about when you made your first resume and you went into Microsoft Word or Google Docs and you found a template and you erased what was already there. And then you put your information in and it looked great, but you didn't have to be a graphic artist to do it. Well, an Amazon Blueprint is a like that, but for voice. So if you go to Amazon Blueprints, you can just Google it and it'll pop up. You can actually see that teachers have the ability to make flash briefings. They have the ability to do flashcards, story questions, all sorts of things that can support learning. And so I think that the ease of just creating with flash briefings makes it where you don't have to have the ability to be a developer or a coder. You can actually even make a flash briefing, all of it directly on your phone through the Alexa app, which is absolutely crazy to me. I can update it. I can do everything straight from that app. So in terms of, is it a lot of extra work for a teacher? I think the learning curve of just learning something new in this case is probably fairly small, but and then the ongoing is not that much more than something you would normally do. I specifically, when I did this for a classroom, I created all my flash briefings on Anchor FM, which is a podcast hosting place, and I would upload it from there so that if a family said, she said that in the flash briefing 3 days ago, they could actually go to the website and hear it again. Just another place. I'm a firm believer the more places you can put it, the better. But I'm also a firm believer that teachers don't need more stuff on them. So it shouldn't be like you have to do this. But I think what I'm seeing is a lot of teachers are seeing the benefit because it's connecting them to families that normally weren't connected.
Yeah, I can see that for sure. And so that's one part of it where, you know, you have a connection with the student and parents and this constant communication happening, right? What about in the classroom, like in the classroom setup?
Yeah, so if you're wanting to use it in a classroom, there's a lot of, because of student privacy laws like FERPA, COPPA, SIPA, there are a lot of hoops at this point in time that you're going to really have to jump through. You've got to be very intentional about using it correctly. And I will say for a lot of teachers, they don't find that it's worth it at this point. It's just the hassle of knowing how to set it up correctly doesn't make it worth it for them. For those that do, I have a website, juliedavisedu.com. And on that, I've got just, when you're going through your setup, certain things to turn off, certain things to turn on when you're setting up Alexa, for instance. I also suggest that all teachers, no matter what grade level, use the Kids Edition Echo Dot, because it is COPPA compliant, because it uses the free time, which is like a dashboard that kind of protects the level of information. So if I ask that Echo Dot something that may be an inappropriate question, which a middle schooler might do, it would say, I'm sorry, I can't answer that question. If I ask that question to a regular one, it might give us an answer, albeit scientific, but it would give us an answer, but not exactly what you want being spread throughout a classroom. So I think setting it up is the hardest part. Once you get it set up, that process is the, you know, the hardest part of making sure that you're doing that correctly. And that includes just turning off learning student voices because of the personal identifiable information, not using students' names when they're talking to the device. You know, if there's a skill to ask a kid's name, I just suggest don't use that skill. Make up crazy cat or something like that. That's that person's, you know, name for that thing. And then just a teacher has to set boundaries. You know, they've got to, this is a ubiquitous device in a classroom, which means anything that's said to the device and the response is going to be heard by everyone. And so setting up boundaries, just like a teacher has to do for any classroom management, it's important to do that as well. But, and I think once the novelty wears off of having it in the classroom where the kids are just being silly with it and, you know, once the novelty wears off and they're seeing you use it as a tool for learning, that's going to have a long lasting effect. So imagine us being in the classroom and I'm having this lecture right now and I'm talking to the student and all of a sudden a hand goes up and says, Miss Davis, what is ubiquitous? And we can say, instead of me saying, we'll look it up, or me giving an answer that's still a little bit confusing, I can look over to that device and I can ask it, what does ubiquitous mean? And I have not lost the eye contact with my students. They have not looked down at their device to make me lose them behind their screens. And all of a sudden we've got an answer and the conversation keeps going. So that's the value I think that the voice brings to the educational setting.
So, wow, a couple of questions comes to my mind, a lot, in fact, right? So what kind of, you know, like success or failure are we setting up students for? For example, you know, when we are asking the assistant, like, what is ubiquitous or things like that? I've seen kids asking mathematical questions as well, like finding the easy way to get the answers to a solution, right? Yeah. So are we setting up and setting the expectation for the kids, like they have an easy way to get an answer for any complex, you know, like algebra questions or anything? Like my son is in like fourth grade. Uh-huh. So obviously he started doing algebra. So once he tried doing that, actually asking Alex, yeah, and I was like, no easy way around. But how do you actually balance that out? Like if in school we are trying to create more a tech savvy environment for the, yeah, kids, and making sure they are not using it for and getting answers so simply and easily that they don't understand the basics and concepts of your basic learning.
So one of the things, being in the role that I am, that's not new to voice. any technology that is in the classroom. There are apps that you can actually scan, use my phone to scan an algebra problem, and it will give the kids their answer. You know, kids can buy research papers on the internet, that type of thing. So there's several things that, and honestly, my opinion in that is it's a hard issue. You know, you've got to get to the bottom of what makes them feel like that's okay. So one of the things that's very important to me as an educator is that we're teaching digital citizenship. And that's what is the appropriate way to both behave and use technology. And I think that that's where a lot of school systems are really lacking. They've put technology in the hands or in the classrooms, and they haven't really prepared the students to really critically think about what should I or shouldn't I do in this situation. And there's nine elements to digital citizenship. And it's my opinion that every school system has a responsibility to really just teach those students to realize you can take the easy way out, but it's not going to help you in the long run. And no matter what it is, whether it's bullying online, whether it's, you know, there are certain standards that are expected. And so that's just something I think if we can ignore it, we cannot use technology in a classroom, or we can hide it from our children, but we're not really preparing them for the world that they live in, nor the future that they will be in. I think it's much easier to convince a fourth grader of why he shouldn't do that than it is to try to convince a college student why he shouldn't do that. So my opinion is you start very young teaching digital citizenship, just so that it becomes part of who they are. And I used to go into classrooms every year, and I would tell students, you know, at some point in time, you're going to see something, hear something, or have the ability to do something online that makes this little light bulb go off above your head and makes you start going, And that's when I hope that those digital citizen lessons kind of come to mind and they go, wait, this is when Miss Davis told us about this, and I've got a choice to make right now, you know. So it's that type of thing. It's not easy. You know, as you know, parenting is not easy. Dealing with children is not easy. And so it's going to always be an ongoing thing. Here's the upside, though. With a voice assistant, you've got a record of what was asked. So you can always go back and go, you asked them this question for your homework, you know. So there's the upside.
For sure, definitely. And not for voice shopping.
Yeah, right.
Many kids have done that. I was recently, not voice related, but I was recently looking at one of the posts where the kid is like, my kid has been attending the class, but was marked absent like 3 days in a row.
Right.
And she wasn't sure what happened. So eventually this kid was in front of the camera watching YouTube videos, did not attend the Zoom meetings. So
but he was in front of the thing
computer that, and yeah, the parent was like, okay, he's in the class.
Yeah. So one of my favorite stories, and as an educator, I'm not out to do gotcha moments, but I had this parent that was constantly saying, my student is spending so much time, we use the LMS Canvas, he's spending so much time in his math class. It is absolutely ridiculous how much time. Well, Canvas has the ability for me to go in and look at the analytics to actually see how much time he was, you know, spending in there. And I was like, showed it to her, and she was like, so he's not in Canvas. When I'm like, yeah, that's the case. You know, I mean, it'll eventually bite you in the tail.
Yeah, so I'm sure with voice, the benefit we get is at least we have the voice recordings as well, like what they have asked,
right,
and all of those things. But does that get into any kind of privacy, which you mentioned is a big deal, right? And especially with kids, all the recordings and everything, they have to be monitored. Mm-hmm. And there are certain laws to protect kids, their voice, and other things. So what's your take on that?
Yeah, so right now, both Amazon and Google Assistant have come out where you can actually turn off where it keeps any recordings from the very beginning. So in the beginning, when we first started using these in the classrooms, we had to manually go in and delete them and say, delete this, delete this, delete this. So now turning that off from the beginning is just a really good way to do that. One of the upsides, I think, of voice versus me having, and I 100% believe that students should have access to computers as well. But I think one of the upside to voice is because it is verbal, other people are going to hear the questions that are being asked. Where I can hide behind a screen and start typing things, the voice has that communal aspect, which kind of polices itself in some ways, in that, you know, if someone asks something inappropriate or at the wrong time, some other kid in the class is going to go, wait a minute. You know, you'll have some kid who will speak up about that. So I do turn off the save the recordings, but I also don't use the device unless there's a teacher in the classroom. You know, I don't want them just to have access. And I think it's really, really important, and I stress this a lot, there's rules on the wall that it is only for educational purposes. It is not to say, hey, Alexa, play a fart. It is not to say, you know, it is only for educational purposes. And if you set those things up in the beginning, you're going to get, just like with the technology, you will have kids off task. It just, that's part of life, but it's much easier to bring them back in when they know the expectations from the beginning.
So the technology is still evolving, and we all know there are problems. The assistants do not understand the accents in first place, you know, and Alexa has trouble understanding my accent all the time,
right?
So it's okay when you are in a home setup and something like this happens, and especially in a school setup when there are so many kids and, you know, the assistant understood a kid and not the other kid. Do you see any kind of mental imbalance or psychological issues coming in?
I think it can have. I think that, and that's one of the things that I still struggle with knowing, based on reading the laws and feedback from people, if your voice is actually considered a personal identifiable information. Because if it isn't, then we could turn on voice learning on these devices, and that would solve some of these issues. It would understand you're speaking versus my speaking and know that I'm going to say y'all and you are not going to say y'all, you know, that type of thing. So that's the one thing that I would love some clarity on in terms of using it for students. Last year I worked with some international students who were a part of the school system that I was part of, and they were all Asian students, and they were struggling with a certain course because of the terms in the course were really hard for them to grasp. So I started making study guides for those students, and they would then sit in front of the Alexa, and she would ask them a question, they would give the answer. And many times they said the right answer, but because of their accent, they weren't understood well. And it was frustrating for them. And these were high school students, and it was frustrating for them. But I will also say, they would often look at me like, that's what I said. And I would pronounce the word, more precisely, and then they would say it again. So it helped them to improve their English. But my concern is, we've bothered them so much to get to that point mentally and emotionally that it's not really, I don't think it was causing detriment to a high schooler. I do think it could cause detriment to younger children, you know, where they just get so frustrated.
Compare, right? They are at an age where they are comparing everything, like, he got bigger candy than mine and right, things like right. that. Yeah. So, or you got more screen time than me, or ma'am always calls your name and not mine, or things like that. Yep. So definitely I can see, like, if the assistant is biased towards the different accents,
sure.
It's going to be an issue for kids, right? And when we are talking about bias, we know, like, especially it's hard for these assistants to understand kids' voices. And we also have seen that a certain kind of accent is not recognized because of the technology limitations. But at the same time, we've also seen the racial kind of issues, like Black voices are not recognized, you know, and English voices or US American English voices are recognized better and things like that. So where are we heading with these things and then trying to blend in the education and bringing in small kids in here?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I totally believe that's an area. But I will say in the last 3 years since I've kind of been in this space, dramatic improvement in the understanding. And I will say wholeheartedly that I believe the Google Assistant probably understands much better than Alexa does. But because of the safeguards I can do with the Alexa, I'm more prone to put that in the classroom. So, it's a give and take in anytime we look at technology of, okay, what are the best ways to do this? But I 100% believe that what you're saying is a huge part of things that have to be done better in order for this to be a true immersion into the space of education. And it's not just voice. You know, we've got the same issues with any type of technology where an equity issue, if you're born into a home with more money, you're more familiar with that technology already versus not, which automatically starts those lower income students off at a lower level of learning because they have a higher learning curve just learning the devices itself. So, equity is a huge thing in education. I personally believe that voice assistants can solve an equity issue in a way that we've not been able to do in terms of being connected. You know, there's different equity issues, but in terms of being connected, because I can put on my phone, I can download the Alexa skill or the Google Assistant skill without having either one of those devices in my home. Most families have access to one of these. And so that allows a connectivity to families at home that we may not have had via a computer. Not everybody's got multiple computers in the home to be connected to. So while one area, there's a lot of room still needed for growth, in some ways, because of the price point and where we are of what they can do with it, I see huge gains in equity.
So this brings another good question, which is, again, the different kind of technology adoption and all of those things, to my knowledge, also depends on the school district because right. They have to make a decision about all of these things. And again, we have, we live in a country where there are clear segregations about the school districts and, the privileges and all of those things. Mm-hmm. So what kind of, challenges are we talking about? Like one district adopting to, education with voice or, voice technology in their entire system or curriculum versus the others, which are not adopting because of the regions and the different kind of demographics they are serving.
Yeah, I'm seeing actually it being less about regions and demographics and more about the student privacy. The holdback for most chief technology officers and people who were in my role in schools was more about an unsurety that they could stay within the teachers could use it within the parameters they needed to. As we know, this is a consumer-driven device. And so its goal was not for it to be in the classroom to begin with. But most technology that is being used was not created for education to begin with. It was adopted and adapted for it. So my personal opinion is, and this is what I said from the beginning, even the poorest districts can usually find $25 to put a device in a classroom that would have all contact versus, putting five Chromebooks in a classroom at $150 each, which would be still limited because you've got way more students than that. The issue in my mind, and the reason that hasn't happened at this point in a way that I think could really make a difference in education, is because of student privacy laws, they're holding back from it. And because they're not quite sure, we're still in that early adopter phase. They're not quite sure, well, what do I do with it, even if it's in the classroom? So it hasn't been justified in their mind that it's a good use of money. But in my opinion, once it's kind of seen as a value, you're going to see that those poorer districts and school systems will be like, hey, wait a minute, this is an answer to an issue that we've had for a while, you know, not having connectivity because of, and you're talking about one device being connected. So in terms of bandwidth and your computer networks and things like that, that's a plus too. You know, if we can only have to worry about one device versus putting one to one or, you know, 10 in a, you know, it solves some issues for those poorer communities.
And what kind of risk are we talking about?
What kind of discovery?
Risk.
Risk are we talking about? Well, the risk is the same ones as I mentioned before, the risk of the student privacy, you know, and how do we set those up and making sure that the teachers are actually, that they are set up from the beginning in a way that protects those. And I have always been a firm believer, if it's not going to be in there for intentional use, then it doesn't need to be in there. So if it's just a novelty for your classroom to ask what the weather is or to play a game, then boot it, because the benefit doesn't outweigh the risk. If it is for truly helping with learning and setting routines to make the classroom go better, smoother, then go for it. But the risk at this point, in my opinion, because of the media and the stories that have been out there about, you know, it's always listening, it's here's what they're doing with your data, and because these companies didn't speak into that space vehemently from the beginning, there's a standoffishness that has to be overcome.
And how about bullying? Do you see it could be an issue because the assistants are not able to understand some people or some kids, the other kid starts bullying? You know what? It doesn't understand you or blah, blah, blah.
I guess that is absolutely a possibility. I can tell you from my own use that when a kid hasn't been understood, usually what I see is another kid coming to their rescue, you know, like, oh, blah, 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 blah. You know, because it being understood can be something as simple as they don't speak loud enough, you know? And so what I've seen, and I know that may be not be the rule, and there's always going to be that opportunity for anytime a kid can make fun of another kid, it will happen at times. But what I've seen it for the most part is kids really like helping each other to understand more, and even asking, hey, I've had elementary kids say, it don't understand me, you know, and so they would ask me to ask it. So, you know, the clarity, I don't know if you've heard, but even speech pathologists are actually suggesting that families that have some kids with some speech issues actually buy these devices because they can put it in a room and they can practice, and it doesn't have that sense of there's a person looking at me that knows I said that wrong. And so there's that sense of almost like anonymous trial and error, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that happening. But again, speech is very broad, right? And there are kids who have disorders, adults who may have difficulty in speaking, Tourette syndromes or autism or such things. And these assistants are not equipped with such thing. So do you see that could be a blocker for schools thinking about adopting such technology?
Well, honestly, one of the greatest niches that I'm seeing in education is special education classrooms, because what they're seeing is those students are loving something that they can interact with. Some of the things that you that you mentioned, they also might not have good fine motor skills. And so having to type something is very hard for them, you know, that type of thing. It's been really interesting to me to see the niches that are more likely to adopt are often in the special ed sector of students who are on the spectrum of autism, and they don't know when it's appropriate to respond or how to appropriately respond. In my opinion, if someone would start creating skills for these special niches, it could really be something that could help these students in particular. But it's been really, I've had more special ed teachers interested in what these devices might be able to do for their students than any type of teacher.
Interesting. So how far are we from really adopting voice in education?
Yeah, I'll be completely honest with you. There are days I want to bang my head against the wall because, like I told you, I've been actively in this space for 3 years, you know, playing around in it before that, but actively in the space for 3 years. And it just feels like either do it or stop, you know. And I feel like the pandemic, while it offers lots of opportunities for voice because it's a non-touch, it's actually, you know, I can be 6 feet away and still use this device. I mean, it has a whole lot of reasons why now is the perfect time, but it's also a very imperfect time to add anything else to a teacher's bag of tricks, so to speak. And so I think right now we can't expect any great big jump to a new thing. And quite honestly, I don't know that in the next 5 years we will ever see like this whole district's buying into this. I see this more as a help in the classroom, in a classroom that learning's going to happen one way or the other. So I don't necessarily see this being something that it's going to make a huge difference in the future of education. I do see it being a way for educators who feel comfortable with it to really add another layer of how can I use that to meet the needs that I've got going on right now? And so until it's something that maybe takes the place of school intercom systems as well, where, you know, we can get rid of those school intercom systems or the walkie-talkie systems or something so that there's that connectivity where it makes sense because of what it does. So think of Alexa for business. If we could do that type of thing in a classroom environment where a school could do announcements over all of them at the same time every day, and then teachers could have their own announcements on them. And then, you know, today I want you to go to this group, go use that device to go to 123 math, and that assistant has now learned those students' voices and knows exactly where to start that student. So it's differentiating the learning based on the needs of that student. That's the future. Are we 5 years out? I don't know. But I think either there will be a brand specific custom device made for educational purposes where we will have less worry about the student privacy laws, or we will see someone add something that works on top of these devices to give that security that's not already there. My concern is, from the beginning, is that right now we're talking about a $25 device. The more you start becoming more branded and customized, the higher that price point is going to become, and the more likely school systems aren't going to see it as a necessity.
Right. Yeah.
So that's the give and take.
Yeah, that was my next question, because right now only, you know, there are these small packs, $25, right? But then as you start to think about EchoShow kind of device where you also have a screen so that you are catering to other kind of kids who have some sort of difficulty hearing or things like that, right? So in those situations, those are like somewhere around $100 or so. So now you have a significant increase in the cost. Plus, these devices are, although blueprints are there, like you mentioned, but there is some learning curve involved. Someone needs to learn those things. And if we are talking about, you know, having it recognize all the different kids' words and all of those things, we are tying it to some sort of account management system where it knows the kid and the, you know, voice prints and things like that. So how do you even convince and, you know, yeah, convince, I would say, how do you even convince the, you know, like management or educators, the ROI of investing in such kind of technology?
Yeah, for me, it was really simple. I am 51 years old, and I remember when mobile technology hit the education scene. iPads hit the market, and education went crazy for iPads. But the amount of time I spent as an educator over those iPads of trying to discern, does this app protect my students' personal identifiable information? Is this app truly for learning purposes? Is this device something that makes sense in my classroom? I spent so much time uploading, taking things off, doing things because mobile computing happened to education. We as educators didn't get a voice into, hey, this is great, but you need to be aware of these things. So it's my opinion that there has to be trailblazers in the educational industry speaking into the space so that voice doesn't just happen to education, but it's truly being thought through and being considered as, okay, we're doing this. I mean, I've been in these voice Zoom meetings and people will start talking about, oh, but what about children? And the answer of some of these people are, well, you just keep the kids away from it. Well, that's not realistic. This is a ubiquitous device everywhere. So you can't ignore this niche of people in the world with this device. And so I believe that just like when I start with a kindergartner, they see this as a toy because their mother and father has given it to them to be quiet and let them mm-hmm. play games.
Yep.
So I have all this I have to overcome as an educator because I have to turn this toy into a learning tool when it's at school. I want to do the same thing with voice. I want it to be seen as a learning tool. You know, I'm not saying it's not, I mean, it's okay to have fun with it, but it doesn't need to be the only thing in their head.
Yeah. Wow. Interesting space to be, definitely. And I think there are a lot of challenges, a lot of opportunities for sure. Let's see what happens in the next 5 years.
Yeah, we'll see.
And where it goes.
Honestly, I often think, maybe it was my job to open everybody's eyes and somebody else gets to run with that. You know, I don't know if it'll be me, but I feel very passionate about the opportunities and the possibilities of voice and how it can support education. And that's why I keep in here. I'm not making money at this. I've made zero money in the role that I'm doing. It's just something that I feel strongly about.
Yeah, definitely. I can see that because educating itself is, you know, like educating people about the technology and making sure they understand the value it can provide in itself is a big thing. And you and your podcast, you're doing a great job there for sure.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So if you were to step into my shoes, is there any other question, you know, you would have asked?
Oh, you know what? Your questions were awesome. Very well thought out questions. Now, I mean, I think the only thing that I would add is I also have a fear. I have a fear of what's the next thing and how is that going to impact children? Is it going to be a chatbot that looks like a person? And then we're dealing with a 7-year-old who doesn't know if they're talking to a person or to a robot. The significant impact that can have on a child and their understanding of what's real and what's not real and what we should do with AI and what we shouldn't do with AI. That's another reason I find myself in this space. We've got to protect that very delicate age from the possibilities of it really impacting them in negative ways. And I believe wholeheartedly that artificial intelligence can be used in a way that really benefits them in their lifetime. But I also think that there are some doors that we just don't need to open. And if we open it, we can't just say, well, we'll keep kids away from it, because that's just not reality.
Yeah, definitely. I can see that happening for sure. You know, like initially when Amazon was launched and they launched the voice shopping, kids were the first ones to jump in and buy things.
Yeah.
You know? And especially my son, if he talks about anything, he'll be talking in millions. He'll be like, order 100 million chocolates or candies or whatever. He's like that. So kids can do all sorts of things. And I still remember, you know, when one of the kid ordered gingerbread houses, hundreds of them. So those kind of things can happen. And then Amazon realized like, okay, there are issues. And then they had this unique pin and stuff like
right.
that.
Right.
So I think when we are designing a solution for kid, we have to be more proactive in thinking.
That's it. And so like what you said it right then Amazon did a pin. Everyone's got to think proactively in this space, not reactively, yeah. because when it's reactive, it's too late. You know, I mean, that was something that was funny, but it could very easily be something that could have some devastating impact.
Definitely, definitely. So what keeps you inspired?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I mean, I do think the changes in the industry, the little stepping stones that I see keeps me involved. I'll be completely honest with you. I'm at a place now that it feels like we're stuck. The voice feels stuck. And I want to remain relevant. But if there's not much change in the next, you know, year or so, it doesn't seem to make sense for me to keep trying to be the evangelist for voice and education. And so I think fortunately, things like this that remind me that it's a passion I have makes a big difference. And, you know, I'm reading articles about how there's going to be customized, you know, devices and customized chatbots for specific industries and things like that. And my hope is that from all that I've said and done over the years in this, that someone will pick up the mantle and move forward and create something that's truly helpful for education. I personally believe there is value for a voice assistant in a classroom. And while a lot of people are saying, well, it's just going to be part of multimodal, I totally agree with that. I think we'll be interfacing with some of the ed tech things that we already use in a voice way. But I still see value of just that standalone voice assistant as well. And so I don't want to lose that potential because it just jumps to the next thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a very valid point, right? And see, I feel like, you know, evangelism itself is something, you know, when you're talking with people. And that is what the whole reason why I started the podcast in the midst of the pandemic was I was missing interacting with colleagues or like-minded people who are in the voice tech field. And I thought like this could be a good opportunity to connect and learn and listen. And somehow, you know, I feel motivated that way too, because, you know, when the other person is sharing the same kind of passion as yours, there's some sort of positive energy exchange, yeah. which is happening.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Because there are some days, I mean, yesterday I was being, Jeff Blankenberg interviewed me. And I was like, I have no idea what my podcast is going to be on Sunday. And he said, oh, I'll be on your podcast. I'm like, yes, because that's where I'm at right now. You know, I don't want it to just be the same old, that only feels like that's all I have to share right now. And yeah. that kind of concerns me.
Yeah. Well, we will get through it. For yeah. sure. You yeah. know, kids are also learning and all of those things. So yeah, Julie, our podcast name is The Future is Spoken. And we have not done this in the past, but I've started with your episode. Okay. So in your own words, what do you think The Future is Spoken means to you?
The future is spoken. I believe that the spoken word is the natural interface. We in the womb, you know, we hear our mother's voice even in the womb. And what that means, I think, you know, we talk about our last dying breath. We talk about the last words someone special to us said to us. And so I think that what we will see and what the world is showing is that voice is going to be a key player in determining our future and who we are and how we interact and what we have access to. And so that, I guess, is the best thing I can say is that what we've done with our voices in the past is going to be even greater for the future.
Yeah, that's a great answer. So where can our listeners connect with you?
Yeah. So I have a website, juliedavisedu.com. I'm very active on Twitter at juliedavisedu. I'm on LinkedIn, Julie Daniel Davis. But any of those places, feel free to reach out. This, like I said, this is my passion project, and I get on my soapbox and it's hard for me to get down. So if anybody wants to talk more, I'm more than willing.
Thank you so much for your time today. We will make sure we add all of this in our show notes.
Thank you so much.
It's been our pleasure.
Thanks for listening today. If you would like to post a voice comment, please go to www.witlingo.com/DAA. That's www.witlingo.com/DAA. We'd love to hear from you. Remember, you can find all the information on becoming a certified voice interaction designer and show notes and more at our website at digitalassistant.academy. That's digitalassistant.academy. We encourage your feedback and questions. Be sure to get in touch by using the Digital Assistant Academy's website. We will include the show notes link. In our next episode, Michael van der Woeden speaks with us about sonic branding and voice design. Until next week, take care.